Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. We're winding down, by the way, because in about 2 weeks, we take our long-deserved, month-long, possibly a little bit more, vacation for the summer. We won't have much to talk about. But as always, we are brought to you by Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com/5reasons, and you get $20 just for signing up. And of course, Prize Picks. Use promo code 5, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, they give you $100. And it's not one of these crazy rollovers where you got to bet it through like about 1,000 times. No, you bet it through once. So in essence, they're just giving you $100. Take it. All right. We reside in Winterville around here, by the way. I don't know what the hell losing's, what is losing? Dolphins should schedule like a scrimmage with the Jets or something this weekend and kick their ass just to get this out of the way, right? Right, Chris?
Like, yeah, I mean, as long as we can have, fit both games into the scrimmage and just get it out of the way. Maybe have a couple of bye weeks.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but Sammy, you got to jump on some of these bandwagons. All this winning is it's intoxicating. You got to just jump on. Are you aware? Can you name one Florida Panther?
I cannot.
I don't think I can name a single ice hockey player that owned a Florida Panther.
well, we don't lose around here anymore.
Mario Lemieux still play.
No. Matthew Tkachuk. That's all you gotta know. He's if you made a short list of the best athletes in South Florida, I guess Jimmy Butler will be at the top. Matthew Tkachuk might be number two. He might be number two, as even ahead of Tyreek Hill. And I know that might sound blasphemous on this podcast. But yeah, we're Winterville around here. But we're not gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about UDFAs, and then we're gonna bitch about the offensive line in the second half of the show. Which is
There's only four Americans on the entire team.
I believe so. Matthew Tkachuk is one of them.
He's from Arizona.
Yeah, great player. Great player. Although some might think that their best player is Sasha Barkov, which is he's obviously not an American.
No. Where do you think EU2 Luster him? He's from.
I think he's from Sweden.
He's from Finland, mate.
Close.
Ah, those fins.
those sneaky fins.
Dolphins signed like every single UDFA that was available to them. And I'll start with a few that I actually know about and actually watched. I'll start with Aubrey Miller, and then I'll go around the horn here. I guess he fills the need. They don't have that guy. They don't have the plug and play, fill linebacker. Atlanta Roberts is the ceiling, but my God, if you're finding Atlanta Roberts as a UDFA, you're doing good work. His tape checks out. Bottom of the roster guy, I think he makes, if I had to bet out of all these guys, besides the punter, because I think Michael Turk, man, I think he has a really good chance at supplanting Bailey as our starting punter. But other than him.
There's quickly forming like a Turk brigade.
Yes. He has a fan base down here.
Yeah. The Young Turks.
The Young Turks.
Yeah, he has fans. I don't know where they came from, but evidently he does have fans. If I had to bet outside of Michael Turk, I think Aubrey Miller makes the team. At the bottom of the roster, plays a little special teams. And, you know, if he sees the field, something went wrong, of course. But I like the player. Kind of surprised he wasn't in the seventh round draft pick or so. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, Aubrey Miller. I mean, they need a guy that's going to replace you know, essentially Sam Egwuregbun, but also a guy that's going to do, you know, some of the stuff that Landon Roberts did. And that's very much kind of what Miller does. He's this kind of, you know, downhill, very physical, see ball, run to ball, kind of run defender, you know, good play speed. Look, he's short, he's stubby, he's got short arms, but actually, you know, he knows how to make a tackle. He knows how to get guys to the ground. He knows how to get through the crowd. And you know, I liked when reading about him that scouts were just like, you know, ball of energy on the field, ball of energy off the field. They need a guy like that who can come in, you know, rotational on downs one and two, and you know, make some tackles late in the game, be a special teams leader. You know, he was an absolute special teams gem at Jackson State, and you know, and averaged what, 9 tackles per game. Even at that level, which is excellent. So yeah, I think he stands a chance. I think, if you know, there are a lot of names on there that you think kind of camp body kind of guys, but there's 3 or 4 on there that I think would stand a chance, and he's absolutely one of them.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that it's funny when you watch him play and you look at his size and stature and everything, I actually kind of reminded of David Long, who they just signed in free agency. So it's an interesting typing going on here. I think, you know, there's 4 guys. There's the 2. There's Jerome Baker and David Long now, and then you got Duke Riley, and then you got Channing Tindall. Mm-hmm. Are there only going to be 4 guys? Is there going to be a 5th one, you know, where he's competing with, say, you know, let's call it like a, even though Cameron Good is more like an outside linebacker, but you know, would he be competing with him on the roster? I don't know. But I do know that, you know, we have some questions about Channing Tindall's fit for this defense. I do anyway. And you know, so fast forward, could I imagine Aubrey Miller ending up in some situation where either he is making the roster or he's on the practice squad and getting called up for games and he's playing ahead of Channing Tindall? Yes, I absolutely could see that, actually. You know, it's certainly not out of the realm of possible. I'm not declaring it that's going to happen. It's just that it strikes me as one of those situations. And he seems like a, you know, perfect Vic Fangio instinctive linebacker. And I think that he brings a little something different to the table compared to like Duke Riley and Channing Tindall. And that might be something that really sits in his favor, because you know, David Long goes down for any length of time, or and he does have an injury history, let's be honest. Then, you know, it's either Duke Riley, or, you know, if he has to step in a game, then who, you know? And I don't necessarily know it's all interchangeable between Jerome Baker and these other 3 guys.
All right. And I guess we're going to move on here. And the next group, and I guess we just take them all in a group, because a couple of these guys I never saw play before. I didn't know they existed until they signed up. A couple of these guys after, I actually watched them play. James Blackman, was he at FSU for like 10 or 12 years? Like, he must be like 38 years old by now.
I think he was backed up Charlie Ward.
Yeah, I think so, right? Yeah, like competing with Chris Wienke.
He was teammate. He was there when Burt Reynolds was there.
Yeah. Well, he finds his way onto the roster. But yeah, I could see him kind of making the practice squad. Like, he might be a useful camp arm, you know. Alama Uluave, I don't know who the hell that is. He's an office lineman from San Diego State. Sam, you want to interject something? Do you know anything about him?
I mean, no. I mean, I know about Blackman.
What about Blackman, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like an absolute, like he's got the, you know, frame of a basketball player in terms of how he looks. He's got a decent arm, but his problem at FSU and at Arkansas State was always just inconsistency. You know, I think he's the guy that would end up in, you know, what was NFL Europe or the XFL or the USFL, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some off field issues as well with Blackmon, but you know, the arm is good. You know, and he can make all the throws, but it's just way too inconsistent. He never really seemed to have much of a pocket presence at Florida State. So I was quite surprised that they even brought him in. I know he played at the Tropical Bowl, and I think he's matured a lot from some of the issues off the field. But yeah, I mean, I don't see him sticking around.
You know how alarming this is that you know, he's a tall guy. He's over six foot five. Like mm. without the shoes on, he's only 189 pounds at six foot five and a quarter.
Good, like, shooting, you know, guard.
I don't even know how to describe that. That is wafer thin as my Python. Mm.
He really is wafer thin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. Do you guys? So we already got Simon on record saying he's not a threat. Is he a threat to Skylar Thompson? You think, Chris? Maybe.
No.
Skylar Thompson was a 7th round draft pick. You know, we got to stop talking about him like if he was a top, you know, a top draft pick. He's essentially a UDFA as well.
No, you're right. You are right. But I think that his value reset probably when you know, after. The preseason of last year, when he was, you know, rocking preseason, because the Dolphins started getting offers on him. And so I think that, you know, that's a good value reset. So we shouldn't just think of him as just a 7th round pick anymore. We should think of him as basically like, you know, a day 3 pick kind of play, having that sort of worth. And you're right. I mean, those guys are not untouchable by any means. I just think that the familiarity that that Mike McDaniel has gotten with the guy for the last year is probably making him safe. In addition to, let's be honest, Tua's injury prone QB1, and Mike White has not exactly been the model of health as a QB2.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that that necessitates that Skylar Thompson makes the roster. This 4th quarterback is about between James Blackmon and Henry Colomby, who came over from, I mean, I know he's at Marshall for a while and then he played in some other places.
Texas Tech. And I mean, he's a scattergun quarterback.
Oh yeah. He's never struck me as being very good. I watch a lot of Marshall and, yeah, so between those two, like, somebody's going to be kept around as a 4th arm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. practice squad, et cetera. Like, someone is going to fit that bill, is going to make that. I don't know if it's James Blackmon or even Henry Colomby. Maybe it might be somebody that they just – that isn't even here yet.
Imagine if you got Stevie Wonder a pitching mound and spun him around 5 times and then told him to throw at the pitcher. That's what Colomby is with accuracy.
Okay, that's a great scouting report. I'll write that one down and save it for camp, because I wear a helmet every time he gets onto the field. All right, moving on. I kind of know a little bit about this guy, Brandon Peely, USC, bad body defensive lineman, defensive tackle, kind of a 0-1 shade, maybe 3-tech on occasion. These guys are all over the place in college. I don't think he's a threat for the roster. Your quick thoughts, Simon, on Brandon Peely?
Yeah, they gave him a lot of money, but you know, I watched him quite a lot on tape, and you know, he is an all-out 110% hustle guy, and you know, you love to see that effort. You know, he will chase guys 30, 40 yards down the field. A play is never over with Peely, and the coaches will love that, but he just isn't very good. He gets zero penetration. He's on his ass a lot, you know, and it, more credit to him for getting up off his ass and then chasing back down the field. He just is never involved in a play. You know, there are players on that USC defense that absolutely flash, but Peely was never one of them. You also mentioned the guy, Alamo Ulave, the center from San Diego State, who actually is a scheme fit, but I mean, he is small and, you know, he is really nasty, but he is small and stubby and not overly athletic. You know, he's definitely a scheme fit, but he's just a, you know, this is a guy that is absolutely maxing out every single thing he's got. You know, he's got a little bit of exposure, and he's tough as old boots, but I can't see him making a team.
He's 6'1" with 31-inch arms.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
You know, that's
Tyrannosaurus Rex is our
I mean, that's I don't know if that's a problem or not, but like that is something. That's something that describes what you're going to see on the field with him. He's a short tank. But yeah, I think Peely, it's interesting because what the motor implies to me with these guys, and the reason I give them such a plus for that is a lot of the guys that succeed at the next level just have like a different energy level during the games, you know, that they're able to sustain because of their stamina, their, you know, their durability, their overall energy level. And guys like Peely, you know, that's where the promise of that guy is, and you might want to try and coach him up. But he's 6'3", 316 pounds. You know, that's a good nose tackle type of guy to look at. But actually, if you look at another guy that they signed from I think he was UCF, the Anthony Montalvo.
Yeah.
That's an interesting guy as well because he's certainly smaller than Brandon Peely. You know, so Peely's got that NFL sort of almost planet theory kind of look going for him. Montalvo is not like that, but what he is when you watch him play, you basically think that you're watching you know, like Kelly Gregg play. You know, if you think back to Carl Klug, who used to play for the Tennessee Titans, like you're seeing a guy like that, and there's a Tom something or other at Minnesota for a long time that was like this too, so you're watching kind of a Kelly Gregg stump. Like a wrestling champion, and he is a wrestling champion, I believe, Anthony Montalvo. So I think where they're looking to go with these guys is kind of that they want somebody that can be a stump in the middle, and just be hard to root out.
Tom Johnson.
Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Tom Johnson. You're right. Tom Johnson. Right. Yep. There it is.
This one's kind of interesting because they got Verone McKinley last year, and when they got him, everybody was saying, "Okay, this is a sleeper for a guy that could make the bottom of the roster." Bennett Williams out of Oregon, really highly productive college player, and you wonder, okay, why didn't this guy get drafted? He ran 4.66 at his pro day, and for those of you who know, on pro days you get a friendly stopwatch, let's just say. So evidently he should be slow. This is a productive player. I think he'll be a useful player for this team. I think that's Verone McKinley competition. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, he's had some off-field issues as well. I mean, he went to – didn't he end up at – didn't he go JUCO and end up because he was at Illinois first, wasn't he? And then had some off-field issues, ended up at JUCO.
Yeah.
And then found his way back to Oregon because he was I think he was the first I'm trying to recall where I read it I'm sure he was something like the first true freshman to start at safety in Illinois for like 20 years or something like that, but yeah, I think if you look at I suppose if you take Javon Holland as Oregon secondary guys, and there's a sliding scale. And then McKinley's next. And then I think Williams is kind of, I mean, I think he's the sort of guy that, you know, you're not going to want him getting matched up against somebody in the slot. I think he was a solid tackler. But, you know, this is a guy that you're looking at as a special teams guy. And actually, interestingly, he's going to be the guy that's kind of trying to push for Verone McKinley for a roster spot. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of a good football IQ. But, you know, he is a churning the bottom of the roster type of player.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you, what the hell is with Oregon safeties?
Well, no, it's crazy, isn't it?
They kind of like him, right?
Javon Holland, Verone McKinley, so. now Bennett Williams.
I know, right?
And Texas safeties.
Yeah.
Texas safeties. Brandon Jones and Deshaun Elliott.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, you got anything on Bennett Williams? All I got on him is a pretty good college player. You know, I watched him play. Good college player. You know, not the greatest of athletes.
Not really anything on Bennett Williams. I'm a little, you know, I'm wondering about if there's any guys that might be moving, you know, moving from corner to safety and try, you know, I don't know what they intend, for example, with Kedron Smith from Ole Miss, but you know, he's a guy that I've watched over the years. He, you know, goes to his pro day, he only runs a 4.61. He's at 6'2", a full 6'2" and 201 pounds. So you know, there's the size and length there to make that change. And I wonder about him. I don't really think much about Bennett Williams because I haven't really watched him play. So other than the Oregon comment, you know, I know that on the speaking of the defensive backfield, and I don't know if Simon has a better grasp on him or not, but Ethan Bonner was supposed to be a pretty good choice.
Yeah, I mean, he's big. He's like 6'2", 190, 6'1", 190. He's really fast as well.
Yeah, he ran a solid 4.41 or something like that.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with him has just been durability. I think he only played 5 games last year at Stanford because he was injured. But, you know, in terms of the sort of height, weight, speed, he is a really interesting character. And apparently coaches love him. David Shaw talked about his work ethic. He was a team captain. You know, so if they can keep him healthy, you know, he could be a dark horse to really push for a roster spot, or at worst a practice squad spot.
All right, let's take this next little group here, and I could speak on one of those guys. One of these guys, Chris Brooks, running back out of BYU, Ezekiel Vandenberg, linebacker, Illinois State, Julian Hill, tight end, Campbell. I don't know what Campbell is, but evidently it's a college that has football. I'll take Chris Brooks at 230 pounds. He transferred out of Cal. He has really good contact balance, and it's kind of shocking to find out that he runs like in the high 4.6s. He's kind of a slower type, kind of a bruiser. But if you watch him, he has a quickness and a twitchiness to him that's kind of exciting. Like, these are the type of guys that show up all of a sudden at camp, and maybe they're at the bottom of the running back room, but you get them, you stash them in the practice squad, and maybe you need them Week 11, and he comes on and he runs for 40 yards and helps you win a game. Chris Brooks is a guy I'm interested in watching play in camp. Your thoughts on this group here, Brooks, Vandenberg, Hill? Do you know anything about these guys, Simon?
I haven't seen Hill because I don't get any Campbell tape. Brooks I've seen a bit, and he, like, I hate this, I kind of love this phrase, but sort of hate it because it's derogatory to women, but, you know, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane kind of thing. He's got that great body, but just doesn't, you know, he is not a guy that plays up to his size whatsoever, which is really disappointing, you know, because you just think when you're built like that, you know, there is an opportunity to really kind of, you know.
Yeah, he absorbs contact, and that's why I say he has really good contact balance, because he doesn't tend to go down. But I'd like to just see him deliver blows at that size.
Which he just doesn't do. You know, he's got he's a little bit of explosion. He can get outside. He can, you know, he's okay with his hands out the backfield. But you just think, you know, with what you've got in terms of your package of skills, you know, you should just be better. Vandenberg falls into that category of the guy that we talked about first, Aubrey Miller, in terms of just his ability to, you know, you look at him and you just think, you know, he lacks the kind of the length. He's not overly quick. But again, just instinct and understanding of football, FBI, football intelligence, kind of that relentless nature. Obviously, he won the whatchamacallit award for his ability.
Buck Buchanan.
That's the word, the Buck Buchanan award. You know, and I think what you like about him, what coaches like about him, is just his ability to be in the right place at the right time. He's got a great motor. He just keeps on plugging away. And look, last year he had 21 tackles for a loss and 14 sacks, and you can't argue with that ability. He's heavy-handed. He converts, you know, what speed he can possess into power. He's got some really powerful shock in his hands. And again, he'll have to make his worth on special teams, but he's an interesting guy.
Chris?
Yeah, I think picking up on your last guy, really, Zeke and Vandenberg. I mean, first off, I think anytime you can pick up somebody with that kind of accolade as a UDFA, I mean, it's definitely worth flipping over that rock, right? This guy won the award for best defensive player in all of the FCS. So that's something. And to me, when I watch him play, it's like I'm looking at a clone, essentially, of Kyle Van Noy. And this is how Kyle Van Noy played a lot at BYU, and this is how he looked and tested too. They basically have very, very similar, I think, athletic profiles overall. And it's about his instincts, his savvy, his football intelligence, and that's how Kyle Van Noy made his way as a linebacker and as a pass rusher. Is by being a smart guy. So that's his path. I would say that Vandenberg, maybe if I were to contrast with Kyle Van Noy, maybe he's a little bit more bull oriented, you know, bull rush oriented, and about using his strength and hands a bit more Trace Armstrong like, I guess. But you know, overall, I think that's a really interesting player for Dolphins to invite to camp. Julian Hill, I have taken a look at. I did watch some Campbell, but he was in I believe it was the Hula Bowl. So I saw him play in the game. You know, he's got the reputation, and you see it on some snaps in Campbell of just being a real bully out there. You know, because he's physically so much bigger. And I think that's, you know, that you see that, but the real, I mean, first off, he looks fast at Campbell, but in terms of real speed, I'm not sure it's actually even better than Durham's, Smythe. And so you're looking at this guy as a big physical, blocker, which the Dolphins also just signed in Tyler Croft. So, you know, that just happened today. So there's him. And then one other guy, actually, that you mentioned that was interesting, Chris Brooks. The only thing I know or I'll say about him is he's the only as far as I know, he's the only running back that we have that has some size to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could be interesting because kind of if you think about the things that they can do, especially now that they drafted like a Devon Achane, you know, there's potential for sort of a fullbackish running back, a large running back to sneak on the field and fill some roles that allow Achane to be a little bit more versatile, and so that has me wondering about Chris Brooks. But at this point, you know, we went through this last year with the guy from Cincinnati that we you know thought might make it, might be the next thing, and then sure enough, they just ditch him.
All right, moving on, and let's talk about two offensive linemen, and then we could go to break. I'll speak on one, and I guess you guys could speak on the other. Jared Horst of Michigan State, offensive tackle, good tape. I guess there are levels to this, and that's why the second name is the one that I'm going to talk about, which is DJ Scaife out of Miami. You guys could go first on Horst. There are levels to this, and evidently a draftee is not the level that Jared Horst has reached, even though he played at Michigan State and has some good tape. Your thoughts, Simon, on this player? Does he have a shot?
Yeah, I think he does have a shot. I mean, Chris will talk to you more about Horst because he's his guy. But the one thing I'll say about Horst is that he has that sort of ability that you cannot measure with a stopwatch. And I think that is a fair analysis of him. He also has the sort of ability that if you were to do what Jared Horst is very good at on a night out, you would end up in prison. And with that, I'll hand you to
Chris. Yeah.
That is 100% true. I watched this guy literally and intentionally teabag somebody on the football field. And so, you know, what's crazy about him is he showed up to Arkansas State, and this is a testament to his playing style. If I'm going to paint a picture for you, he showed up at Arkansas State, and the first year that he played, he got 19 penalties, which is just astounding, you know? But somehow, as he went through his college career, 2 years at Arkansas State and then 2 more years at Michigan State, he cut that down and got really good at being an a-hole but not being caught, flagged for it somehow. And so that's what he is on the field. He is a true jerk. He is going to bother and annoy everybody out there. A little bit like Christian Wilkins, I think he has that sort of mentality. But what I think stands out the most about two things really with Horst that stand out the most that make me think if he were to move inside to the guard position, you know, and start working that phone booth, that you might really have something. Which, by the way, he's game for that. Like he has talked about that he might have to move inside to guard, and he actually thinks that he'll excel there because he likes that things happen more quickly on the inside, and that he, you know, it'd be more, there's more brutality there on the inside, and I think that feeds into his game. He's a guy that just has endless well of energy. Just on the field, every single play, he's not going to play snap to whistle. He's going to play snap through whistle, you know, and he's just going to expend this massive load of energy, just being annoying and being disruptive every single play. And it was something that actually drew me to Darnell Washington when I first started watching him as a tight end. Is just the way that the way that they can be effective on their blocks. Now, what's the downside to Horst is he has the length, technically speaking, you know, arms, I think maybe 33.5 inches, and his wingspan fits. He has the length to play tackle, but for some reason he does not play with long arms whatsoever. He doesn't punch well. He doesn't have the timing of the punch. I actually think he would benefit greatly from a move to the inside, not because he's insufficient at tackle, but really because he wants things to happen quickly. He wants to get his hands on people and wrestle them to the ground and impose his will. And that's, you know, he's very old school that way. He's talked about, you know, he sees a lot of position blockers and guys who just kind of, you know, catch and block, you know, kind of finesse style. And that's not him, man. He's going to wrestle you to the ground. Sometimes in a way that makes you pretty certain you're going to get a penalty flag. and somehow he doesn't. But I think that he's got a strong chance at left guard if he moves inside. If he's in tackle, I'm less confident.
All right. Before we go to break, I'll talk on DJ Scaife. He is the anti, and I know I overdo it with Will Mallory, but he is, in my opinion, he's the anti Will Mallory. Okay. Both highly recruited, both expected a lot of. DJ Scaife started 51 games for the Hurricanes. Even in their worst times on that offensive line, you could always count on him. You could always watch him during games, always doing his job. He has great feet. He reminds me a ton of Robert Jones, kind of the strongest, you know, he plays with a little bit of brutality, great anchor, great feet, just not the greatest of athletes, 6'3", 320-ish pounds, although it gets to fluctuate a little bit. I'm interested to watch him in camp because I think he's that type. He's the type that is maybe your eighth or ninth offensive lineman, and maybe you need him in a pinch to play guard. Now, I know he played a little bit of right tackle. That is not his game. He is an interior guard and nothing else. Right guard, especially.
Keep in mind, Alf, though, he was Butch Berry's starting right tackle.
Yeah, well, Butch Berry was wrong. DJ Scaife is a really good right guard, not a very, very good right tackle.
He moved into right guard for 2 years, I think, and then he played right tackle all this year. I believe played 811 snaps at right tackle this year, and wow. only five at right guard. He was a right tackle this year, and he was a right tackle in 2019 for Butch Berry, and he was a right tackle in 2018. He played about 450 snaps at right tackle back then, but in 2020 he got moved inside the guard. At 2021 he stayed there. And I agree with you. He's closer to being an NFL player when you see him at right guard. I think that I still get actually a little disturbed by how much strength he lacks, I think that he does have explosive feet, and he can actually be shocking in the mirror game. But he, you know, as a run blocker, it's not very good. And when you move him on to the interior at right guard, you know, don't expect it to look all that good as a run blocker. That's the downside to him. But he's been a tremendous pass protector at guard, like a really, really good pass protector at guard.
Yeah, I don't think he's a tackle in the next level. He just doesn't look the part. He's kind of smallish to be a tackle at the next level, but I love him as a guard. I think he could stick as a right guard in this league. All right.
Yeah, he's a bit short for you'd think a tackle. He has the arm length for some reason. It's a really weird build, actually.
Mm. Yeah, kind of a Robert Jones look to him, really. Although Robert Jones is a little bit bigger. I think Robert Jones is what, 6'4"?
Yeah. I think he's got far better feet than Robert Jones. So that's where he really interests me. When he gets into his kick slide, it's pretty explosive and quick. And his mirror game and the way that he reacts and uses his eyes, and ties them in with his feet are all very compelling. It's just that when you get down to it at the end of the day, he doesn't have a lot of sand for anchor when he's playing at tackle and somebody gets a head of steam on him. And then at guard, you know, he's going to be playing even bigger dudes, and it's not going to be tragic, but I mean, like, it's not a whole lot of strength being shown to me.
All right, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the rest of these UDFAs.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Do you have a water leak and can't find where it's coming from? Are you dealing with water or mold damage in your home or business? Then call Water Cleanup of Florida at 954-579-0356 for immediate assistance. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and their team is prepared to handle all types of leak detection issues, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. After the leak has been located and repaired, Water Cleanup of Florida will then clean, dry, and fully restore the damaged areas. Water Cleanup of Florida is fully licensed, insured, and certified to provide the one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There is no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle the entire project from start to finish. Service areas include Miami, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356, or visit their website at WCUFL.com. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
All right, and we're back. All right, we took Scaife, we took Horst. Simon, you reported on this guy, Anthony Montalvo. You talked about a little bit about him in the first half of the show. You also report on Randy Charlton. Talk about those two guys, Anthony Montalvo of UCF, Randy Charlton of Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, Chris really talked about Montalvo earlier on. I don't really have anything to add to that. I mean, Charlton, they showed a significant amount of interest in Randy Charlton before the draft. He was one of the players. Am I right in thinking he came in for was he a 30 visit guy? I mean,
yeah, he was. He was. Yeah. He was on that list. Yeah.
You know, he's a kind of a, you know, he's obviously an edge Mississippi State guy. I mean, he's slow as molasses. I think he ran a 5.06. Big. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. 5.06.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big guy, though. He's kind of 6'3", he's 286. And you actually wonder whether or not they'll just, I was reading a piece last night with the Seahawks. When they drafted Mike Morris, who ran exactly the same time, 5.06, and they just said to Morris, "You just keep eating, buddy. We're not going to have you. We're going to have you as a big kind of, you know, defensive end, and almost, you know, reduced down inside to defensive tackle." And I suspect that's what they'll, you know, he's got the frame certainly to add some weight already 286. You know, so you could, it wouldn't take much for him to get up into the 300-pound range. Actually, he's had a lot of snaps as a fresh, you know, right the way from being a freshman, 322 in his first year, 321 in his second year. You know, 210 in 2020, which was reduced obviously because of COVID. 501 snaps in 2021, and then a fifth year guy had 498 snaps last year. So this is a guy who's had an awful lot of snaps. He's a good tackler. He's got strong hands. You know, this is the kind of the sort of a guy that you could, like I said, reduce down inside and make some plays on the, you know, on the interior of the defensive line. But he just does not have that twitch, that burst, that speed to do anything. He's not kind of, you don't really see, apart from his heavy-handedness and his, there are no athletic traits that stand out. He's a little bit stiff. And yeah, I mean, to me, it's going to be a struggle to make the roster unless, you know, the plan is for him to add on a significant amount of weight. But you kind of feel like there must be a plan for him. You wouldn't bring him in on a 30 visit. You wouldn't get to know him the way that they do and then sign him as an undrafted free agent if they didn't have a plan. So it's clear that there's something going on that they want to do with him. And I suspect it would be moving him inside potentially full time and getting him to add some timber.
Chris?
When they signed him, the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, he does look, I don't know, he was bigger, but he did try to trim down, I think, for his pro day to try and run fast. It didn't work.
No.
You know, he trimmed down to 265 at his pro day, and still ran that 506. So, you know what he's not going to be, right? You know, he's not really going to be a true edge for this defense, like, you know, an Andrew Van Ginkel type of linebacker or something like that. He is going to be a guy that, as you said, you know, he's going to beef up and try and factor into the bigger bodies that way. You know, guys like Jalen Twyman and Bronson, you know, he'll factor in probably that way. But, you know, that said, I was just watching a game of his earlier today, you know, against both Georgia tackles, you know, as well as Georgia's tight end, Darnell Washington, well, two tight ends. you know, he's holding his own. I mean, he's a strong player. Like, so I think it'll be interesting to see him go in camp, as they probably get him to put on some more weight. But it, you know, he's definitely one. He's a player that's played at Mississippi State. I mean, he's played some competition. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him rise up.
All right. This next group, David Davis from Western Kentucky, Ethan Bonner, cornerback from Stanford, Mitchell Agud from Miami, very productive this past season. You know, I guess he had a bad pro day, and that's what put him as a UDFA. Garrett Nelson, edge of Nebraska. If you want to take any of these guys, Simon.
Yeah, Nelson to me is the one guy that stands out. Actually, I think Nelson has a really good chance to make the roster. You know, again, obviously there are reasons why players become undrafted free agents, right? And his limitations are those kind of critical areas of speed and length for an edge guy. You know, he's 6'3", he's 248, he ran a 491. You know, that's, you know, he's not explosive, 166 10 yard. But actually what he has is just great short area quickness, fantastic football character. He's a tremendous tackler. He's just a full-on 110% competitor, kind of a, I want to say headless chicken play style, but that doesn't do him justice at all because he's not headless chicken. He's just tough. He's just run, he just never stops running. A team captain, Scott Frost, said he was the best leader we've ever had at Nebraska. And Frost would know, obviously, having been there as a player and a coach. Absolute standout on punt return and punt coverage teams. Started every single game for the last three seasons. So he's available 32 straight starts. I mean, he's cut like an Adonis in terms of his physicality. But yeah, you know, look, he's an undrafted free agent for a reason because he's got short arms. He can't stack and shed necessarily at the point, but just a guy that can, you know, just make tackles and be a nice rotational kind of a nice rotational guy who actually you probably want to play on early downs rather than pass rush downs because he can tackle, because he can hit, he can get people to the ground. And he just maximizes everything he has with just all out effort and hustle and leadership and those sorts of things.
Chris?
Yeah. So I think that I don't really, I haven't really watched Daywood Davis, to be honest. And Ethan Bonner, we talked about earlier. Mitchell Agudi, or Agudi, or I don't know how you pronounce his name. He is an interesting fellow to me, because he does have a high motor. He's also got a good background, a good, good story. He's, he's very involved with missions back to Africa with his parents, and giving, and various charitable, I guess, deeds. And when he was 9 years old, he had that story where he was skating in a skate park, and then he fell and hit the back of his head and went into a coma. And the doctors basically told his parents that he's going to be a vegetable. And then he woke up the next morning, perfectly fine. It was really really weird. But I watched him play, and he plays with a great motor, and he plays with heavy hands, which I think is important. And so you're looking at a guy who's going to be a real linebacker in this system, 6 foot 4 inch, 242 pounds, running a 4.75. And I am interested in seeing how that transition goes, because obviously he's been an edge player, and I think that his duties in Miami will take him a little bit beyond that. Overall, though, what I will say about the UDFAs, and something to keep in mind, is I did see an interesting study that kind of makes sense. Whereas that people know about, like, relative athletic scores and different measures that kind of take all of your pro day and combine information and produce an athletic score relative to your size and position and such. There's definitely a good correlation between that athleticism, those measures of athleticism, and your success in the NFL, among drafted players. At the and that's the good athletes get drafted high. There's nothing groundbreaking here. But it flips around to the opposite with the UDFAs. The UDFAs who make it, UDFAs who make it in the NFL tend to be biased toward the under athletic, I guess, guys. And it sort of makes sense in a way if you're thinking about it. Once you've already siphoned off all the good athletes in the draft itself, right? You've taken all the good athletes. The good athletes that remain, the really good athletes that remain among the UDFAs that didn't go drafted, are ones with some sort of severe problem, and that could be because they played in the FCS and they have virtually no experience, or maybe just some other reason. Maybe it's off field, maybe it's character, maybe it's medical, who knows? But so your UDFA strategy, your undrafted free agent strategy, should really be focusing on the guys that you just look at and it's quote unquote just a real good football player, and not the guys. You shouldn't be chasing the athletic scores among your undrafted free agents, because that's already happened. That's already been selected out. And so I find it interesting that you're talking about guys like Agud and Nelson, who might be, or and go back to Zeke Vandenberg, who might have an impact on this team, because they're good football players, but they just didn't test well, and that's why they slipped through the cracks and made it to the undrafted stage.
All right. And this last group, before we get into Michael Turk a little bit, Leonard Taylor, tight end of Cincinnati. I don't know who that
He
is.
signed with Jacksonville.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay. So
He's not ours.
he's not ours. What about Alex Jensen, South Dakota?
He's ours.
Okay. Do we know anything about him? Because I think that's the last guy on the list. Or no, there's actually five more guys on the list. How many guys did these guys sign? Thoughts on Alex Jensen?
Simon, I've actually seen him play, if you
Yeah,
don't
you
know.
take
If,
him, Chris.
yeah, so Alex Jensen, I did watch play in South Dakota, and he was another one that actually he was in the Hula Bowl. So I was watching that game and just watching him. Listen, he looks like he fits from a mobility standpoint, and you watch him play and he does, he does have that mobility. Attractive. He's kind of a taller, slimmer looking offensive tackle. The problem is that in the physical strength department, based on what I have seen, like, I just don't think the guy holds up. You know, I don't think he's and I mentioned that I wasn't quite happy with Scaife's physicality or physical strength. But Alex Jensen, I mean, he's a guy, he probably runs, he might have played in the 280s or something like that, based on the way his body is. And he plays like that, unfortunately. You know, you want a guy that maybe is a little bit smaller, but for some reason he plays much more brutally, like Jarrett Horst does. But Alex Jensen, he's skinny and he plays that way. And so that's the concern there.
All right, final group, Chris Coleman of Cal Poly. I don't know who that is. Kedron Smith, I kind of know who that is. I'll reserve my thoughts on him. I don't have a strong enough opinion. James Tunstall of Cincinnati, did not watch him play. Simon, anything on any of these three?
I mean, none of them are making the team, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Kedron Smith has a look, but nah, I don't see it either. Chris?
James Tunstall in particular, when I watch him play, he's not a 320 pounder like we were talking about earlier. Scaife is a 320 pounder, I think. Doesn't quite play like it. You know, Tunstall's a guy who is only like, I think, 306 pounds or something like that, and he plays much heavier to me. Like, he plays very heavy boned. Heavy-handed, like he's the sort of guy. He's got high hands, but when he locks onto you, it's usually over. The thing that I wonder about with him, I get a sense for, is I wonder if he's always mentally focused, because you end up seeing him in a lot of these plays. Like, when he lets up a pressure, it seems like it's because he made a technical error or a mental error, like a focus error. And he has made a lot of those errors, because I think he let up like 6 sacks this year and a bunch of other pressures. But like, from a physicality standpoint and physical ability, you know, it's actually there. I think he can play at the next level, but you know, mentally, is he going to get it? And that's the big concern about him.
All right. And the final guy, Michael Turk. Simon, do you know when Michael Turk made his debut? Because when I saw that they picked him up as a UDFA, I was like, wait a minute, this guy was actually available. I thought he was like drafted or he was a UDFA like 2 years ago and busted out of the NFL. Do you know when he made his debut in college?
What would you mean? What year?
Yes.
2012.
Good guess.
I don't know, Alf.
2017, six okay. years in college at nice. Lafayette. All right.
That's like James Blackman.
Yeah.
Okay. Played 2 seasons at Arizona State afterwards. And then, of course, we know him as an Oklahoma Sooner. When I saw that they picked him up as a UDFA, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Michael Turk. I know him. Yeah. He was at Oklahoma for like 4 years. No, he wasn't. He was there the last 2 years. Highly productive. One of the best punters in all of college football. I think he has a shot. I think his uncle was the former Dolphin.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He
is,
so
yeah.
What do you think, Simon? Is he's taking Bailey's job, isn't he?
I don't know, actually, because I think do you store a punter away on the practice squad? Because he's got obviously field flipping ability in terms of his leg. I mean, he had a punt of 50 plus yards in 11 or 13 games last season. Hang time is excellent, but what he does, what he struggles with, are the two things that Bailey is really good at, which is out kicking his coverage, which he does consistently, but also he's got no real ability to directionally punt. So he, like, touchbacks are his enemy. I mean, touchbacks are the enemy of punters anyway, but he needs to learn control in terms of just not booting the ball as far as he can. He needs to be much more directional. He's not a great pooch punter. And actually his kind of control, directional control as a punter isn't amazing. And those are the things that Bailey actually is really good at. And so whilst I think it's great that, you know, guys can, like, it's like the Matt Araiza, Ryan Stonehouse debate from last year in terms of, you know, Araiza being amazing at just, you know, booting the absolute hide off the ball and being able to launch 80-yard punts, but Stonehouse just, you know, not as strong a leg, but directionally just absolutely outstanding. So I think that's one of the things that he will battle against, because coaches, I think, whilst, you know, they, you want the big leg, you want it to be able to flip the field. Actually, if you're going to out kick your coverage and the guy's going to get a 30-yard return, or you're just going to boot into the end zone when you're punting from your own from the opposition 45 and it just goes into the end zone, your net gain is 20, 25 yards, and that's not ideal. And Bailey's able to do that and consistently get the ball down inside the 10, inside the 5. So I think it will be an interesting battle. And look, Bailey was an all-pro punter. Let's not forget, you know, he was injured last year, but this is a guy who was one of the was the best punter in the league. So, you know, hopefully if he's back to full health, which certainly looks like he is, then, yeah, there's a real boon for the position. The other interesting thing, obviously, will be who will the holder be? Because obviously, you know, we've moved on from
Morstead.
What's his name? Yeah, exactly, last year. So also getting that consistency working with Jason Sanders will be key as well. And Sanders won't want to keep rotating between the two. So it'll be key to see. And I would imagine Bailey would have the inside track on that as well. And I don't know whether or not Turk was the holder at was the holder in college. I haven't checked that out.
Yeah, I haven't checked that out either. He did turn down the Patriots, so we have that to be happy about. Chris, your thoughts on Michael Turk? He takes Bailey's job, does he?
You know what I think is funny is and really cheap, but you know, also just kind of funny is you know, his NFL.com draft profile, a thing that Lance Zierlein does, and I think Chad Reuter works on that as well. Like the NFL comparison line, they just slip in there Matt Turk, which I think is a bit convenient.
He was the holder both early in his career and then when he transferred to Oklahoma.
He does have another I mean, people forget that Matt Turk had a brother, Dan Turk, who was a long snapper in the NFL. So the Turks have an established history in the NFL.
Dan Turk.
What's that?
Did Dan Turk not die?
I don't know if he's still alive. I know he did have cancer though. Like, yeah, I know he got cancer while he was
this show in the took NFL. A dark turn.
Yeah. Didn't it? Now we're playing the Are They Still Alive game.
Google, don't fail me now. Dan Turk.
He died 23 years ago.
He died 23 years ago. Wow.
Okay, so it's not too soon.
Christmas Eve 2000.
Wow.
Of testicular cancer.
There you go.
Wow. So anyway, now that we've been through that, no, I think that it's interesting that he's there. You know, obviously people are going to compare them. But you brought up another name. And, you know, I don't want to get into the more controversial aspects of this, but Matt Araiza himself was just cleared by the district attorney of the charges associated with an alleged gang rape that occurred in San Diego State. The district attorney said, you know, not only dropped charges and whatnot, but actually said that based on information and witnesses, he had already left the party by the time any alleged acts had occurred. So, you know, he is in the clear that way. And I believe he's a free agent because he was drafted by the Bills and then he was released the next day. So that is interesting. I wonder if the NFL will kind of line up to try and get the original punt god back into their camp.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I could see it. Good news is that it won't be the Bills.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we're in suspended animation until June 1st because the Dolphins have brought in every single offensive tackle that's ever played in the sport before or who is a street free agent or a current free agent. The list is extremely long. Like, they've touched bases with every single one of the guys. Like, if you go on the Sport Track list and you look at all the offensive tackles that are left in the market, I think they've only not touched base with like two or three of the guys. But Cam Fleming, George Fant, all of those guys, Taylor Lewan, they've spoken to all of them. I do expect them to sign one of them. Simon, who do you think it is? What do you think they do?
I think it'll be Fleming.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it makes way too much sense. Yeah, and I do believe he takes over at right tackle immediately. I think he takes the job.
I don't think he takes over immediately. I think he's probably the most likely, especially because he was coached by Butch Berry last year. But yeah, I think that they're going to stick with Austin Jackson at right tackle until it just looks egregious, I think. And at which point, yeah, I do expect Fleming to be the starter.
Yeah, they tend to play the offensive tackles except Terron Armstead. And since Terron Armstead will not play a single down in preseason, you could expect Austin Jackson to play at least two halves. And I think they'll see enough in those two halves to be able to form an opinion. What do you think of, and on the way out here, what do you think, Simon, of just, you know, fixing that left guard spot by doing something extremely simple, signing a guy who's been really good in this type of system, who's been a top-notch center for many years, and Ben Jones, who's out there, them just moving Connor Williams over a left guard. I always thought that, you know, while we're looking at Austin Jackson, I think there's an issue at left guard that we're kind of ignoring. Just because he had a couple of nice games and he had a good half in Detroit. What are your thoughts of doing something like that, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea, but I don't think it'll happen because I as we've talked about on OnlyFans, I think they're just guaranteed that they want to give Eichenberg and Jackson as much opportunities as humanly possible. And, Dan Feeney as well, in that mix, I just don't see them doing it. I don't see them bringing in Ben Jones, who, you know, I think there's a reason he was released by Tennessee, having been one of the top centers in the NFL for the last few years. And that's because, unfortunately, you know, the body breaks down. And, it would be great if he came in and Connor moves inside to guard, but I just can't see that happening. I think they're set at center. Otherwise, I think they'd have done something in the offseason. And I think they want Ike and Jackson to do as well as humanly possible. Because, look, both of them, if they both tank out, it both reflects extremely badly on the front office. That's a 19th overall pick and a guy they traded up for in the second round. Mm-hmm. You know, huge capital that they invested in two guys who would look like they're on the verge of busting. So I think they're going to give them every opportunity to succeed, come what may.
Chris?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do it. I think that anything that we've kind of speculated would make sense that they do on the offensive line has not happened, over and over and over again. And so at this point, it's I'm in the mode of like, why don't you guys show me what you intend to do? because I'm tired of speculating it and then they don't do anything. So I think that we'll see. We mentioned Cam Fleming. I don't think the Ben Jones thing is happening. I don't know if it's so much the ego with respect to Chris Greer and not wanting to admit that certain draft picks are busting as it is. I think they consider it really critical that we are able to get away with certain positions without paying for it. From a salary cap standpoint, from a payroll standpoint, I should say, because at the end of the day, within 1 or 2 years, they do have something like $150 to $200 million worth of contracts that they need to give out to a bunch of players that have shown a lot of promise and that are due extensions within 1 to 2 years. So I think that they just think it's that critical. Or this is the only thing I can think of, is that they must think it's that critical that they get right tackle and left guard 1,000 snap play without paying for it. And I think that because they need to reserve that money.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And on the last front, Dalvin Cook, we're still in the same spot that we were a week ago, no matter who they drafted. They're still operating, meaning the Cook camp, operating on the assumption that it'll eventually happen. I'm pretty sure that Miami is trying to get away with not paying any draft capital next year. And I have said this before. I think any new money is probably a deal killer. So it will be a rental, and you don't pay too much for rentals. And hopefully I'm thinking that they're probably thinking, if they cut them, that's probably where we want to go with this and try to do something very simple and very short. But that contract is onerous going forward, and I don't think that that's something that you want to operate under. On the way out, Simon, your thoughts on the Dalvin Cook thing. It's still there.
Yeah, I mean, totally irrelevant. He's on another team, and I don't see why they draft Devon A-Chain and then bring in Dalvin Cook. Makes no sense to me, but, you know, especially for the money that he wants to pay, I'd invest the money elsewhere.
Yep. Chris?
Yeah, I don't think. Well, I mean, it just seems like the noise is so loud, everybody's considering, but somebody brought it up. You know, the noise was pretty loud on Jordan Poyer, too. You know, and that didn't happen. Not only did that not happen, it didn't even look like it was close to happening ultimately. And so, you know, this could be another situation like that. Like, yes, Dalvin Cook wants to be here, but is Dalvin Cook willing to sacrifice money in order to do it? And are the Minnesota Vikings willing to accept very little in the way of trade compensation in order to do it? And we don't know the answers to those questions, and that makes, you know, that makes the whole thing questionable to keep penciling in for us. So I'm just going to, especially if they're that tight on money that they need Liam Eikenberg and Austin Jackson at along the offensive line, then, you know, how do you justify spending another $10 million on a running back? So I'm not sure that I see it ultimately.
Yeah, it's been reported everywhere that, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Well, it still hasn't happened. I would look for June 1st. And if nothing happens then, if he's not cut and they're not going to take the savings, if the Vikings are not going to take the savings then I think he'll play in Minnesota this year. Because I don't think that Miami wants to start digging into their draft compensation next year, even if it's just a fifth round pick. I don't think they want to be doing that. All right, that's it. There is no more. The next time we'll talk to you about, I don't know, maybe Panther hockey. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.